You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes a secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. A world dismissed as conspiracy by those who want to keep its secrets hidden, exposing the dangers, denials, and deceptions. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.
And ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No. Because I'm going to get him.
And welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this episode of the Hagman and Hagman Report, where we're coming to you live from our radio and television studios here located in beautiful northwest Pennsylvania. We broadcast live each and every weeknight, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on our flagship station. That's the Global Star Radio Network. Tune in to us nightly. We also simulcast on Blog Talk, that's BTR, as well. And you can watch us live and by archive. On our YouTube channel, just go to the links located on HagmanandHagman.com. Go to HagmanandHagman.com. There you'll see all of the navigational buttons. Click here for all of the options to watch and listen to us. Don't forget, speaking of websites, we've got two websites, HagmanandHagman.com, HagmanReport.com. The former, Hagman and Hagman, two N's, is for show information, and the latter, HagmanReport.com, is for news information and analysis. And fantastic. I just want to say thank you, everyone, for tuning in and for listening to this program. We had a fantastic week so far, and, man, it's going great guns even more tonight. We've got such a great show lined up for you tonight. You know, folks, the subject of mind control. Now, some people say, oh, that's just hooey, hogwash. It's a science. It's social engineering of the masses. Well, who better to talk about this than fellow researcher, talk show host, and expert in many things, a doctor, not a medical doctor, Dr. Ted Brower. He's going to be joining us for the entire 3 hours tonight to talk about this. Now, at some point during folks, let me just be very quick here, tell you about something. Obviously, you know, there are scammers out there. I'm going to tell you very quickly. There are scammers out there, and protect your elderly loved ones. All right. Now, here's why I'm telling you all this. The reason is this. Maria Canese, the author of Prepare for Persecution, got a phone call. It's a recording saying, this is from, you know, I'm from the United States, the IRS. And, they're filing charges. Have you gotten a call like this? We're going to be filing charges against you if you don't call back, over some tax issue. And the scam varies, but you get the idea. Well, today I received, now Maria Canese had gotten this call some time ago, and of course it's a scam. A good friend of the family got this call today. Same number. And I'm going to give you the number. Scam. I got this call today, and that was as much as I could take. So I've been calling them back. So here's what we're going to do, folks, tonight, because we don't have the setup right now to do this live right during the first hour, but the second hour on air, we are going to call these people back. We're going to call them. Okay, we're going to expose them on air. Because, frankly, I am just, I've had it. These people have scammed the elderly, and the unsuspecting for $26.5 million documented in 2015. Now, why in the hell can't our government do anything about these call shops, these call centers? That's what I want to know. Why haven't they done anything? Well, we're going to do our part. You see, Christians aren't wimps, nor should they be. Okay, my hackles are like really up. I got a vein that's coming out through my forehead. Okay, I am really peeved. So we're going to call them on air as soon as we get the phone line set up here, and we're going to expose them for the despicable, sorry excuses of humans that they are. Am I allowed to say that? I think so. Anyway, so stay tuned. By the way, their phone number, the which is spoofed. Okay, it's going through different hops, but their phone number, in case you want to know, is 323. It's a Los Angeles area code, 323-540-5612. Okay, that's their phone number. It's a scam operation. They want your credit card information. And enough is enough. How many times do we have to report this crap on the internet and be part of no call lists? Well, let's fight back. Let's do something again. Let's do something. Call them. Ask them how their dog is. Maybe not exactly in that language. Let's do something. Let's be proactive. They apparently they can call us without molestation and without federal oversight and impersonate a federal officer, which by the way is a felony. And threaten and extort $26.5 million documented dollars in 2015 from elderly people? Well, we can fight back a little bit by exposing them. Their phone number, the scammer's phone number. And this is, by the way, this is coming from Hagman and Hagman.com. This is coming from Doug Hagman. This is not, it has nothing to do with any place we're broadcasting over. It's me. Anyone have a problem with this? Me. Their phone number is 323-540-5612. That's a spoof number, really. But they're scammers. And we're going to call them out on it next hour. And Ted's going to be kind enough to give us a couple minutes to do just that. And shame on them. And shame on the people that aren't able to do anything about this or aren't doing anything about this. But we look after our own. We put our money where our mouth is. We put our reputation where our mouths are. It's about time we stand up and say no more. This is enough. You scam a friend, a relative, unsuspecting. No, we're coming after you to expose you. Joe.
Tonight's going to be a great program. Go to healthmasters.com, sign up for the mailing list, to be on Ted's mailing list. Dr. Ted Brewer is our guest. He is the author of Breakthrough Health. He is a radio show host here on Global Star Radio Network each and every day. And his show is rebroadcast after our show's over. Also on Sunday nights, he comes on right before Dave Hodges from 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Dr. Brewer, it's great to have you back on the Hagman & Hagman Report.
Oh, thanks so much, Joe. Doug, what's that phone number again for this scammer?
Sure. It is area code 323-540-5612. And I think you might have to ask for Habib. I'm not sure. But certainly they're from the United States Department of the Treasury, IRS. Yeah. I think it's Habib. But anyway.
Well, what you can also do is you can always hit a star 67, which is a caller ID block, so they can't call you back on that number you call from. So that's always something you can do to them too. So yeah, that's interesting. I've had these guys do this to me before, and I always call them back and explain to them in my best Christian way, how the cow eats the cabbage and how they should never call me again and how I'm returning you into every federal agency. But chances are they're offshore. The chances are that number is being routed through L.A. I don't think they're allowed to do this on the United States shore, to be honest with you, but I think that's probably...
Actually, that's true. Yeah. They are. As far as we were able to tell, three hops on the spoof line. And it does show up as it's an LA number, or it's LA area code, but that's the third and final hop of,
wow,
of something across, and we've narrowed it down to the Pacific, India specifically. So anyway.
Well, we've had an exciting week. We've had a lot of stuff going on with Austin. Let me tell everybody, give everybody an update, because I know you mentioned it on your show last week or beginning of the week or whenever all this stuff happened. Last Friday, Austin apparently had gotten some type of bacteria infection. I don't know where in the world it came from. We haven't been able to isolate it. And Austin's my 27-year-old co-host son, who basically does an excellent job for us. In fact, if you want to hear Austin, get one of the best analysis of what happened in Orlando as far as in shooters. Wait until I'm airing that show tonight one more time so you guys can hear it tonight at 10 o'clock when we're off the air. You can hear it for the first 15 minutes. Austin goes into full detail on what guns were used, why those guns couldn't be the guns they said they were, et cetera, et cetera. And so you guys will really enjoy that. But Austin was feeling very badly last week. And what happened to him is he called me up on Thursday, told me he wasn't feeling good, his energy was down, so he went in for vitamin C IV, and then on Friday he had gotten worse. So finally what we did, Doug, I told the doctor that he was working with in Lakeland, I said, this is beyond what we're doing here. He's got shallowness of breath, he's sweating profusely, his heart rate's elevated. I said, I don't know what's going on, but I'm taking him to the Florida Hospital emergency room in celebration. So I took him right directly from the doctor's office, hopped in the car, and did a, 80-mile-an-hour run, just under the 10-mile-an-hour limit you can get without getting a ticket. Got him to the Florida Celebration Hospital, Doug. And what was interesting, as soon as they saw that it was something with his heart, with his breathing, they took him back immediately. He was literally admitted. I recommend Florida hospitals to anybody. They're part of the 7-Day Adventist group, really good group of people. And they took him in the back of the hoodie, hooked up to a cardiac machine, did an EKG on him. And immediately I looked at the EKG, and I was in neurophysiology. I was trained to read EKGs. It's a medical school class that I took at Florida State University. And I read this EKG, and I looked at it. It was completely and totally messed up. To me, it looked like he was having a massive heart attack. And I wasn't sure because, I'm not a cardiologist, and it's been a long time since I read the EKGs. I actually used to be tested on that stuff, wrote papers on it. So I called the doctor in. Now, the doctor had gone to the University of Maryland, and then she'd gone to Brown University for her internship. So she was an Ivy School graduate for the internship. So she was like a Harvard grad, Ivy School grad from Brown University. And so she looked at the EKG. Now, Austin's sitting there, right? And she immediately yells, get me a helicopter. We have to medevac him immediately to the Orlando, Florida hospital, across town. He's being in cardiac care right now. He's having a massive heart attack. And, this is what happened, at the emergency room. And of course, yeah. I'm like, oh, my God, this is ridiculous. I immediately threw my hands on him, started praying for him. And, everybody, of course, I'm praying out loud like I always do. And, of course, everybody in the emergency room is thinking I'm nuts, but I really didn't care. And so they came over and they said, we've got to get him out of here. He's got to get on the helicopter. The helicopter is being prepped right now for flight. But before we do that, we have to do an echocardiogram. So they did that. And then they saw that it wasn't a heart attack, that he was having a severe case of pericarditis from the bacteria infection that actually attacked the pericardial sac of his heart. And when they showed this live heart pumping, I looked at it and it was no longer like a round heart like it's supposed to be compacted. It had spread out and it looked like a fat banana laying across the top of his thoracic cavity, and which means the valves and everything else had gotten completely trashed out because they couldn't pump properly, and the heart was straining the pump. It was beating extremely fast. And so then they put him on a drug to get the inflammation out immediately, and they gave him an injection, 4-milligram injection of morphine to stop the pain. And then they put him on oxygen, and within 30 minutes, he was stabilized, and then they finally got him into the room, and then they did all kinds of tests on him trying to determine this bacteria and its origin. And several of my friends have contacted me, and they said, well, do you think it's a chemtrail? And my response is this: I have no idea. I can't speculate and say what it's from. All I know, this thing attacked his heart, and they have a special type of drug that's used for gout that's used to treat pericarditis, And so they've got him on that to get the inflammation and the water off his heart. The way the heart works, it's got like a thin membrane all the way around it, kind of like a rubber balloon, and it's called the pericardial sac. And that helps to maintain the shape of the heart, because the heart, if it gets enlarged, it can't beat properly. Or if it gets, if it starts to move around in the chest cavity, it can't beat properly. So what happened is this pericardial sac got attacked by the bacteria and started inflammation and fluid buildup inside of the pericardial sac. And when that happened, the heart expanded and basically lost its turbidity or its rigidity and started becoming flaccid, and it kind of just sunk inside the chest cavity, and it was beating against his esophagus, which caused some esophageal erosion. So he was in extreme pain. And so finally they got him on this, I think it's called Colchicine, and I'm not sure that I'm pronouncing that right, which is a gout medication, which also works for pericarditis. And he was in the hospital Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday night we got him out. He had a plethora of tests done. And the reason I really like Florida Hospital is, you know, Austin had canceled his health insurance years ago and has not had health insurance for many, many years, ever since he came out from underneath my policy back when he was 18. And quite frankly, this being a Christian hospital, they told him, they said, look, we're going to give you a 75% discount on the bill because this is what the insurance companies normally pay us. And so we're going to reduce it from like, you know, $30,000, you know, down to like, you know, $7,500. And so it'll make it easier for you to pay. Of course, he's planning on paying the bill. But the crazy thing about all of this is he's still having some elevated heart rate, and he's still having a little bit of shortness of breath, and he's still having to take the medicine for the, you know, for the pericarditis and for the gout, which he doesn't have gout, but that's what it's used for. And so he's getting better very, very slowly. So I ask you guys, for all of you who've been praying for me for the past week, I ask that you continue to pray for this, because this is a really big deal. When I was young, I also had pericarditis, which is kind of strange to me. Mine actually happened to me from having my teeth cleaned, and I had bacteria get into my blood. And at that point in time, they didn't have any true anti-inflammatory medicine that worked for pericarditis, and I was literally in bed for 3 months, Doug, and I almost died from it. It was horrible. And so, you know, when they told me that he'd been diagnosed with this, I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. How strange is that? Some kind of quantum entanglement, that whole deal. But the reality is this, he needs your prayers, so if you guys will continue to pray, that'll be great. And so thank you so much, Doug, for wanting me to talk about this on the air, because I really just covet the prayers of everybody who's listening here tonight, because I know you guys have a real audience of Christian believers. Now, what happened to me this week, this a couple of days ago, in fact, this morning, one of our other guests that we have on, Greg Jackson, wonderful man, he actually sent out a blanket email of which you got a copy of, Doug.
Yeah, I saw that whole thing. I saw the whole thing.
Oh yeah. It's like 60 people got it. And of course, all of the people could contact anybody else, because he didn't blind copy anybody. He just copied everybody so everybody could get into the conversation. And it was about the questions that had been asked to Donald Trump concerning what had happened, you know, with the Christian leadership that he met with on Monday, the Christian, you know, leaders, as far as what his stand was on abortion. And some of these guys here in this response are talking about how if Trump's not willing to go against Roe v. Wade and do all of this other stuff, that they're not going to vote for him. And you read the whole chain of emails too.
It was painful.
So finally I wrote, you saw what I wrote this morning. So after I listened to this stuff, you know, for like, I bet 20 people responded to this, 20, maybe 30. Finally, I sent an email back out to all 60 people, and I said, look, simple question. If Trump is not perfect, who are you going to vote for? Question mark. Who has a chance of beating Hillary besides Trump? Question mark. Do you really want a career criminal in the White House like Hillary? Question mark. Trump has said he will do his best to appoint pro-life judges. Well, Hillary? Question mark. Hillary is a globalist. Trump is a nationalist. The USA is in trouble in a bunch of different areas. Shouldn't we all support the candidate who is at least trying to communicate and support the Christian right? I mean, he called this meeting with everybody. This election is a crossroad election. 8 more years of a fascist, communist, Soros-directed USA will probably be the death knell of the USA. I agree the abortion issue is huge, but the very survival of the USA is at stake in this election. Trump has already said he's pro-life. Hillary is diametrically opposed to all the values that made America great. Let us galvanize our efforts behind Trump. Let's support the candidate who at least is politically incorrect and is brave enough to breach the topics that have been obfuscated by the banker-controlled mainstream media, Ted. And, of course, I got no response back to that. and then I thought about it, Doug, and I said, look, a lot of these people don't have any idea who got this email of what's going on about the world's most influential think tank, the Tavistock Institute. And I sent a whole link out on this and talked about what these people do and who they are, along with a bunch of hyperlinks with videos to try to educate these guys as the fact that they're being used through this Tavistock programming to try to splinter the Christians from voting for Trump. Now, let me explain what I mean by that. If we have 150 million Christians and Catholics who are truly Christians, who want to vote in one block, you know, Jerry Falwell proved that back in the 80s with the moral majority. If they all go together in unison and we vote for Trump, I don't think even all the election fraud on the planet can give Hillary the election, though now the votes are being counted in Washington and no longer by the state government, so who knows what's going to happen with all that. But the point is, we're all being programmed and subverted, and we're being broken up into splinter groups to eliminate our ability to respond in unison. And so when I started doing the research on this, you know, of course, the Tavistock program, which I've been studying for years, popped back up. You know, we've talked about it in shallow amounts on my shows before. But I thought tonight I'm going to go ahead and go into a little bit more detail on this. And now if I'm back on with you guys, hopefully in a few weeks, I want to talk about how this has affected the educational system through Leipzig, you know, through Germany, and how all of this has been tied together in the educational system and how they look at us as animals. Because what you have to understand is when this Sigmund Freud character started all of this mess with the psychoanalysis back in the 1800s, this guy was not a good dude. I mean, he was not a born-again believer. I mean, Sigmund Freud, let me read you this, and this is I got this off of Henry McCow's website. He actually wrote an article on this. Remember, we've talked repeatedly about the Sabbateans, about the sex cult, the satanic sex cult of the 1600s that was taken over by Jacob Frank, and, you know, and how they affected the Rothschilds and all of this stuff that's going on. And this is what was written by Dr. McCow. He goes, Shlomo Freud was a member of the Illuminati B'nai B'rith, and he played a key role in mankind's introduction into the Kabbalah sex cult. Psychiatrists may have a subversive hidden agenda, hardly a surprise given its origins. Freud declined an invitation to travel at one time, saying a wealthy woman client may get well during my absence. And they also said, quote, my mood depends very much on my earnings. Money is my laughing gas. Now, here's what Dr. McCow said. He goes that his career, so Freud's career illustrates how a satanic cult can cast its morbid spell over humanity. The Illuminati sprung out of the Sabbatean heresy of the 17th century. Sigmund Freud was a Sabbatean who was a Luciferian, who was basically a Satanist. And he sold his perverted Satanist beliefs to the world in the guise of science and medicine. This Illuminati-controlled media and educational system hailed him as a great prophet. The Sabbateans were a sex cult that indulged in every sexual perversion imaginable as in a way of spinning in God's eye. This is what they did. Incest, pedophilia, orgies, homosexuality, everything that is unnatural and unhealthy. Freud and his Illuminati backers convinced the world that sexual desire, libido, is the primary motivation of human life, and that sexual satisfaction is the universal panacea. He taught that repressing sexual urges is harmful and results in neuroses. He taught that males experience castration anxiety and females suffer penis envy. As an overture to incest and pedophilia, he taught that children have sexual feelings for their opposite sex parents, such as their mother with a boy, and feel hostility to their same sex parent, their father. At the extreme, his Oedipus complex states that a boy subconsciously wants to kill his father and rape his mother. The philosopher Karl Popper said Freudian psychoanalysis is devoid of all scientific method as palm reading, and his Oedipus complex has absolutely no scientific basis. Typical of a Satanist, Freud denied man's spiritual dimension, our hunger for God, exemplified by our spiritual ideals like harmony, love, truth, and beauty. Influenced by the Kabbalah, Freud taught that God is merely a projection of an imaginary father figure designed to make us repress our sexual urges. I mean, this is the guy who did this. He was a satanic Sabbatean who basically started this entire mind control movement that basically morphed its way into the Tavistock Institute. Now, his cousin, you know, Edward Bernays, the father of advertising, he looked at all human beings as merely animals whose impulses could be controlled through operating classical conditioning, in which he did with his advertising. In fact, Edward Bernays was so affected at this, he was hired by the British royal family in England in the early 1910s area, 1912, 1913, to try to galvanize the United States into a war they were planning on doing against Germany, World War I. Now, we talked about this in detail a few weeks ago and how all of this stuff was funded. Now, when you go back to all of this, it was the royal family, the Rothschild banking cartel, which were Sabbateans, and of course Rockefeller, who was funded as well as J.P. Morgan by the Rothschild banking cartel. And so again, it goes back to this entire weirdo group of people that have controlled us through the central bank. And Edward Bernays actually put together propaganda back in 1910, 15, through all the way through until the United States got into the war. And Woodrow Wilson had run on the premise that he would keep us out of the war and for his second term, that he would never let us get into the war. Well, he wanted to get us into the war because he was a globalist. Wilson wanted a new world order. He was basically a communist who wanted a new world order and was completely and totally controlled by these group of people, including House, who was also controlled by the Rothschild family.
That's right. Colonel Edward Mendel House,
that's right,
by the way. Yeah, and he wrote Philip DeRue, Administrator, and extremely important work to understand the mindset of these people. You're absolutely
right. That's
right.
That's right. And so what happened is he started, see, at that point in time, the largest ethnic group in the United States was German. All the Millers, pretty much all the Millers, all the Browns, all the Smiths, Miller, Braun, Schmidt, are all German heritage. And when you look in the yellow page or the white pages of a phone book, when they used to make phone books, you could find it's page after page after page of Millers, of Browns, and Smiths. And those are pretty much all of German descent. Now, there could have been some English ones in there too, but primarily it was German. Now, what was interesting about this is the Germans were the largest ethnic group in the United States because we had such a huge loss of people after the Civil War, the largest ethnic group then became the Germans. And they came over with their Protestant work ethic, which is no longer taught in school. And they worked their butts off and, you know, developed the country and got the industrial revolution going. And the country was doing great until this group of people got involved. And then these Sabbateans, these Rothschilds, these Edward Bernays wannabes, and the guys that they trained them to do this, who treated us like animals, they started lying about the Germans in World War I. And they said they were cutting off the arms of children and all this stuff in Belgium. All of it was lies. You know, everything. It's kind of like when George Bush Sr. said that the Iraqis were throwing babies out of the incubators on the floor to die. Remember that? That's all Tavistock. All that was lies. Everything was lies. They brought a girl on there so, as an eyewitness. And later, basically, she admitted the whole thing was a lie. Nothing of it ever happened. And she was being paid to do all that. Now, what's interesting about all of this is what they did to the Germans because there was such a huge anti-war effort because, again, a huge bulk of the population was German and they did not want to have a war against Germany. They didn't want to do that. They'd left Germany. Their relatives were all still there. And so they said, no, we don't want to have this. So he started just doing this huge advertising campaign about how the Germans, they were all animals, they were butchering these people and butchering the children. And then, of course, when the Lusitania was sunk, they used that as a massive, massive PR firm, and the Lusitania was sunk on purpose. She was carrying armament. She was told to slow down when she knew the U-boats were in the vicinity. She was told not to leave the port if American citizens were on it because basically if any ship going and supplying England would be considered a ship of war, it would be sunk. Germany took out a huge article in the paper in New York warning people not to get on that boat, and they did anyhow. And so that boat slowed down right outside of England in a high submarine area. The captain could not believe it, that he was getting a shot of this ship basically sitting there at idle speed, and he took his shot. He hit the munition stores on the ship. The ship sunk like within 20 minutes, over 1,000 people were lost, and then the Bernays was able to take this. And again, this was another false flag. They were actually able to go in there, set this thing up, and use a massive advertising campaign against the Germans for the Lusitania. And gradually, they started changing the public interpretation of who Germany was and what Germany did to make them this demon race of hellions who basically like to kill children and sink ships. And so this is how we got into World War I. Now, this is all because Edward Bernays, the father of advertising, Sigmund Freud, the Satanist cousin, that's who he was, basically was also, I believe probably he was also a Sabbatean, he decided to go ahead and just start these lies. And when Goebbels, the German propaganda minister, when he decided that he was going to start the same technique of mind control in Germany using the media, he actually read some of the books that had been written by Bernays and considered him to be absolutely brilliant with what he had done in the United States, and actually mentored his stuff that he was doing, and said, if you just basically lie long enough and tall enough and strong enough, everybody's going to believe you. And this is what Bernays has done. And so the entire government now has been tied to this Tavistock Institute. And so I want to read you some background, but I want to give you a little bit of background on it real quick, and then we'll go through a little bit of the statistics on it. But do you guys have anything you want to add to what I just said about Tavistock?
Well, just one thing, Ted, and you're going to probably expand on this. The incubator story, of course, complements of ultimately the Tavistock Institute.
That's right.
But the Madison Avenue firm that was behind this, behind Bush 41, is a firm called Hill and Knowlton. All right, and if you look
that is correct.
Into, okay, and if you look into that, people can see the incredible, and I mean incredible, money that's generated by this propaganda. And the second thing is the, and I want to get this correct here. The incubator story itself, the testimony came in 1990. It was false testimony. It was given before the Congressional Human Rights Caucus on October 10th, 1990. And as it turned out, it was revealed that this girl, this Naira, I think I might mispronounce this, but Naira, her last name, as it turned out, was El Sabah. Well, as it turns out, she was the daughter of Saud El Sabah, the Kuwaiti ambassador to the United States. She misrepresented herself at the instruction of, and I'm going to be very careful as I say this, through the machinations of Hill and Knowlton, a Madison Avenue type company, on behalf of Bush 41 to sell the Iraqi war to the American people, which really created just a ton of money for the supporters or the NGOs and the manufacturers of war armaments and such. This, I mean, Ted, you just really hit a home run on this one, man. I mean, but people really need to know.
Well, I wanted to tie it together because a couple of weeks ago when I was on with you guys, we talked about how the Rothschilds were involved with the Balfour Declaration and how they, with the formation of Israel, how the Rothschilds were involved in the Treaty of Versailles with World War One, and they actually funded World War One, and actually one of their other guys actually supported Hitler. I mean, this whole thing is just so twisted, dude. I mean, and when you start really digging into it, you start realizing that this whole thing has been planned for over 100 years for this new world order. In fact, with the League of Nations, with Wilson, they were trying to bring in the one world government at that point with the League of Nations, but because the Treaty of Versailles was so awful, they basically couldn't get it ratified through, you know, through the Senate, and so that's why it never happened. But let's go ahead and start on this book. There's a really good book I want you guys to get. I've highlighted part of it. It's by Dr. John Coleman, and he's also the author of the Committee of 300. The name of the book is The Tavistock Institute of Human Relations, Shaping the Moral, Spiritual, Cultural, Political, and Economic Decline of the United States of America. But I wanted to kind of give you a background of who these players are and their links to Satanism before we started on this. The Tavistock Institute of Human Relations was unknown to the people of the United States before he said he exposed it back in like 1969. The Tavistock Institute of Human Relations is Britain's control of the United States, according to him. Up to that time, Tavistock had successfully retained its secretive role in shaping the affairs of the United States, its government, and its people since its early beginning in London in 1913 at Wellington House. Then he goes on to say that the Tavistock began as a propaganda creating and disseminating organization centered at Wellington House, where the original organization was put together with the intent of shaping a propaganda center that would break down the stiff public resistance against the war, entering the war between Britain and Germany. The project was given to the Harmsworth brothers and Rothmere, and their mandate was to produce an organization capable of manipulating public opinion and directing that manufactured opinion down the desired pathway to support a declaration of war by Great Britain against Germany and the United States against Germany. Funding was provided by the royal family British royal family and the Rothschilds. I mean, I just never, and this Rothschild group just never quits. And they were, and one of the primary goals to get the U.S. into World War One, and to and to brief and to direct President Woodrow Wilson, which they did. Lord Rothermere later returned to London and announced those clamoring for war with Hitler as supporters of the Bolsheviks. I mean, he actually said, hey, not to do this because this is all, you guys are all lying. During the course of its involvement, Tavistock expanded in size and ambition. And then in 1937, the decision was made to use the German author, this is very important, Oswald Spengler's monumental work, The Decline of Western Civilization, as a model for the Tavistock Institute. Now, then, German is called Untergange des Abendlandes, which means the decline of Western civilization. Now, they want to use this as their benchmark, as their template to destroy Western civilization and to bring in a one world order. In this endeavor, the members of the board consulted with the British royal family and obtained the approval of the Olympians, the inner court of the Committee of 300, to formulate a strategy. We'll talk about who these guys are in a minute. Funding was provided by the Rothschilds. But I'm sorry to laugh, guys, but it just never ends. But in 1936, Spengler's monumental work, The Fall of Western Civilization, had come to the attention of these guys and in the Tavistock Institute in preparation for changing and reshaping public opinion for the second time in less than 12 years by unanimous consent of the board. Spengler's massive book was adopted as a blueprint for a new working model to bring about the decline and fall of a Western civilization and to create and establish a new world order inside a one world government. Spengler, now this is so important, listen to this, everybody, please. I know I'm reading part of this, so I don't want to make it stymie, but listen to me, please. Spengler, who wrote this book, held it bound to happen that alien elements would be introduced to Western civilization. Okay? That's massive immigration. Okay? I'm going to repeat that. He said the most important thing to do this is that the alien elements would be reintroduced into Western civilization. This is the Mexicans coming across the border, the Muslims coming into Germany, in increasing numbers, and that the West would fail at that time to expel the aliens, thereby sealing its fate. A society whose inward beliefs and sound convictions would become at variance with its outward profession, and thus Western civilization would fall by the wayside in the manner of the ancient civilizations of Greece and Rome. Tavistock thinking was that Spengler had indoctrinated Western civilization to believe that it would err on the side of the Roman civilization and not expel the aliens. Genetic loss that has fallen upon Europe, and especially on the Scandinavian, England, Germany, and France that began just before World War I, is already so great as to be beyond expectations and continues at an alarming pace under the skilled guidance of Tavistock managers. What he just said was this. The DNA of Germany and Great Britain was so damaged and lost, with almost 30% of Germany's population killed, that they couldn't reproduce and be sufficient in order to maintain the race. And that's exactly what's happened in Germany. The two world wars cost the German nations over one quarter of its population. Most of the intellectual energies of the German nation were diverted into war channels in defense of the fatherland at the expense of science, arts, literature, music, cultural, spiritual, and more advanced of the nation. The same could be said of the British nation. The blaze kindled by the British under the direction of the Tavistock set all of Europe afire and did incalculable damage to the Tavistock blueprint that managed Spengler's expectations. Okay, now here's the thing that we think goes. Classical and Western are the only two civilizations that could bring a modern Renaissance. I mean, let's repeat this. This is what this author is saying. This is not me. Classical and Western are the only two civilizations that could bring a modern Renaissance to the world. They had flourished and progressed as long as these civilizations remained under the control of the Anglo-Saxon, Nordic, Alpine races. The unsurpassed beauty of their literature, art, their classic, spiritual, and moral advancement of the female sex with a very large corresponding degree of protection was what distinguished Western and classical civilizations from others. In other words, they protected their women. The women weren't allowed to go to war, and they weren't allowed to fight. You know, they were protected. It was this bastion that Spengler saw coming under increasing attack, and the thinking at Tavistock ran on parallel tracks, but was a totally different goal. Tavistock saw this civilization a stumbling block to ushering in a new world order, as did the emphasis on protection and elevation of the female sex to a place of high honor and respect. Thus, the whole thrust of Tavistock was to demoralize the West by an attack on womanhood. Okay, here we have, now we have women's lib, and the racial, moral, spiritual, and religious foundation upon which Western civilization rested. As Spengler suggested, the Greeks and Romans were devoted to their social, religious, moral, and spiritual advancement and womanhood. They were successful for long as they were in control and could arrange matters, so the government was carried out by a limited number of responsible citizens, supported the general population. But what happened is they were overcome by all of the people who were brought in as slave labor, and they were taken over. Tavistock, by 1937, had come a long way from its Wellington House beginnings, and the successful propaganda campaign that had turned the British public from being strongly anti-war in 1913 to being willing participants, the art of manipulation, and a willing cooperation of the news communication media, which again is being now bought up by the Rothschild interests. This technique was carried across the Atlantic in 1916 to manipulate the American people to support the war in Europe, in spite of the fact that the vast majority, including at least 50 U.S. senators, were adamantly opposed to the U.S. getting in, dragged into the war with Great Britain and Germany. At that point, Wellington House introduced the word isolationist, there we go, now Tavistock program's coming in, as a derogatory description of those Americans who opposed U.S. participation in the war. The use of such words and phrases has proliferated under the expert brainwashing of the social scientists at Tavistock. Terms like regime change and collateral damage became almost New English language, or better yet, Tavistock English. With the Tavistock plan modified to suit American conditions, Bernays and Lippmann led President Woodrow Wilson to set up the very first Tavistock methodology techniques for manufacturing so-called public opinion created by Tavistock propaganda. They also taught Wilson to set up a secret body of managers to run the war effort and body of advisors to assist the president in his decision making. The Creel Commission was the first such body of opinion makers set up in the United States. Woodrow Wilson was the first American president to publicly proclaim himself in favor of a socialist New World Order inside of a socialist one world government. His remarkable acceptance of the New World Order is found in his book, New Freedom. You know, this is Wilson denounced capitalism, and he said, quote, "It is contrary to the common man and has brought stagnation to our economy," which is a complete and total lie, because at that time, the United States economy was enjoying prosperity and industrial expansion it had never experienced before in its history. But this guy was being programmed by these Satan boys from the Rothschild group and from the Sabbateans like Freud. "We are upon the threshold of a time when the systematic life of the country will be sustained or at least supplemented at every point by government activities," what Wilson believed. While the U.S. was still a neutral power under Wilson's presidency, Wellington House poured out a cadence of lies about Germany and what a threat it was to America. I'm reminded of the statement made by Bakken in 1914, in which he was quoting the guy who was saying how all of these lies would be promulgated. President Wilson's statements just before he went into the Congress to request a Constitution declaration of war embodies every one of Bakken's statements that he was lying by diplomacy, and he used the gross propaganda manufactured at Wellington House to inflame the American population with tales of atrocities committed by the German army in its march across Belgium in 1914, which never, ever happened. He goes on to say, "Isn't it amazing that the rush to the New World Order socialist totalitarian government should be led by the United States, supposedly a bastion of freedom?" I mean, this Woodrow Wilson guy, and he goes on to say, "I recall thinking that President Woodrow Wilson's propaganda blast against Germany and the Kaiser, actually the product of the Rothschilds, okay, was much different to the contrived situation of Pearl Harbor, was not much different to Pearl Harbor or the Gulf of Tonkin. Looking back now, I see no difference between the propaganda lies about the brutality of Germany's soldiers allegedly chopping off the arms and legs than Bush's administration to throwing the children out of the incubators. Whereas in 1914, it was the Kaiser was the brute savage, a ruthless murderer, a monster, the butcher of Berlin, all of this Tavistock programming. In 2002, it was President Saddam Hussein, who was all of these things and a whole lot more, including the butcher of Baghdad. Poor, duped, deluded, deceived, connived, trustful America. When will you ever learn? In 1917, the New World Order agenda was being rushed through the House and Senate by Woodrow Wilson, and President Bush forced the New World Order agenda for Iraq through the United States House and Senate in 2002 without debate, an exercise of arbitrary power in gross violation of the U.S. Constitution. And it goes on to talk about the committee of 300 and who they were and how they were involved in this. And the resounding success of Wellington House and its enormous influence on the course of American history began before 1913. Wilson had spent almost a year tearing down the protective trade tariffs that had defended America, domestic markets from being overwhelmed by free trade, essentially the practice of allowing cheap-made British goods that had been made in India to flood the American market. On October the 12th, 1913, Wilson signed a bill that was the beginning of the end of the unique American middle class, long targeted by the Fabian socialists. The bill was described as a measure to adjust tariffs, but it would destroy tariffs. Such was the hidden power of the Wellington House that this vast majority of American people accepted the lie, not knowing or realizing that it was the death knell for American commerce that would eventually lead to NAFTA, GATT, and the World Trade Organization. One of the most interesting pieces of history surrounding the imposition of what the foreign financial slavery measure has that which was sent to Wilson for his signature, which is the Federal Reserve Act. A copy was given to the sinister Colonel Edward Mandel House as representative of Wellinghouse and the Rothschild Group and the British oligarchy, represented by J.P. Morgan, another Rothschild man. So, guys, you want to add any comments to any of this stuff, what's going on with this so far? Because I'm about done with this part of the book.
Just to let people know that what we're seeing today is a direct consequence, planned, orchestrated situation from the history you're providing. This is why this is so important. Just, folks, we had talked, we had Jack Cashel in studio on Tuesday. Of course, he's the author of TWA Flight 800. The same playbook, the same narrative, the same orchestration, set of plays from, that takedown of 800, Flight 800 in 20 years ago next month to Benghazi, and even going back to Watergate because Kissinger was involved. Many of the same players, including but not limited to Hillary, Diane Rodham, the witch Clinton. Folks, you know what Ted Rohrer is saying, Dr. Debra, you've got to understand, because you know what Ted, Winston Churchill, like him or hate him, doesn't matter, said this: the further back you look, the further ahead you can see. And what you're talking about is so critical. I mean, this information is so critical to understand. And once you understand it, once you know it, you can't unknow it. Then you're going to be able to spot everything everything that's taking place, how we're being gamed.
That's right.
Yeah. So thank you. But continue.
He goes on to say the House, after a thorough search and reading of the congressional records from 1910 to 1920, by this guy, Dr. John Coleman, he said that it showed very clearly that Wilson had not signed the iniquitous currency reform bill. This is the Federal Reserve Act. The upper-level parallel secret government of the United States, foretold by H.G. Wells, would not have been able to commit the vast resources of the U.S. to the war in Europe. And that's exactly true. They would have been able to do it. They couldn't have raised the money. The House of Morgan, which is the Rothschild group again, representing the Olympians, which again is the Rothschilds or the Committee of 300, and its all-power City of London financial nexus. Remember, the Rothschild Bank during the Napoleonic Wars
Ted,
took over.
Ted, I got to stop you, brother.
Go ahead.
I don't know if you can hear me, but
we're going to have to reconnect. We're getting real bad
reverb. Well, you actually break up. You're every third word is coming through.
Okay.
All right, so if you just want to clear your line and if we can ask Todd to maybe reconnect, I'm not sure. Can
okay.
we do that? How do we do
right
that?
Right now.
Okay. Yeah. Hopefully he heard that. We apologize, ladies and gentlemen. But
we do have technical hiccups here and there.
Yeah.
And we'll continue to.
But you know, as Dr. Brewer was talking, I got to thinking, well, Agenda 21 now, Agenda 2030, or whatever the current name is, the United Nations, the
Sustainable Development Goals,
all of this, the
harmonization of regulations between the European Union and the United States.
Right. But at the heart of all of this, and this is something that that we really have to understand, how are we being gamed? Well, it's where? What's the origin of this? It is at the heart the Madison Avenue think tank, which is kind of a misnomer, but the Tavistock Institute. And by the way, Tavistock has numerous branches here in the United States. Well, institutions that are directly related, such as Flow Laboratories, Merle Thomas Corporation, Walden Research Planning Research Corporation, Brookings Institute, Hudson Institute.
You know, all these institutions that you just named that are under the Tavistock Institute have websites. Go to the Brookings Institute. Look at their research and publications and their white papers. Read these papers. Any of the subsidiaries of the Tavistock Institute that my dad just listed, look their websites up online. Bookmark them. Create a special file for them. Because there are treasure troves of information in there that are, you know, elitist plans. And they don't hide their plans from the public.
Exactly. Yeah. Go ahead, Ted. Thanks for your patience.
It's so funny. It's like when we start talking about natural doctors being killed or this stuff, all of a sudden we start having problems, don't we, Doug?
Yeah.
I mean, the guys, listen to me. If you're listening tonight, this stuff's real. And, you know, this is how we've been programmed. I mean, you know, if you watch, there's a really good video that you can watch. It's by, he'll come to me second. He says how we've been programmed. And he did a whole big article on this. But this is all how it happens. Okay. A thorough search and reading of the congressional records from 1910 to 1920 by the writer showed it very clearly that had Wilson not signed the Federal Reserve Act, the upper parallel secret government of the United States, foretold by H.G. Wells, would not have been able to commit the vast resources of the United States to the war in Europe. The House of Morgan, representing the Rothschilds, were the Olympians of the Committee of 300, and its all-powerful city, London Financial Nexus, played a leading role in shaping the U.S. Federal Reserve Banks, which were neither federal nor banks, but a private money-generating monopoly fastened around the necks of the American people, leading them to slaughter, whose money was now free to be stolen on an unimaginable scale, making them slaves of the New World Order inside the coming one world government. The Great Depression of the 1930s was the second major catastrophic bill the American people had to pay, the first being World War I. The Tavistock Institute of Human Relations was its creation, and this book is not about the Committee of 300 he's talking about. He wants everybody to read that book. Now, the Committee of 300, which was part of it, is interesting because of how it ties together. Let me tie this together for you real quick. Because I know this is just some crazy stuff. The Committee of 300 and the map of this, it ties it all together with the Rothschild banking cartels. It ties it all together with the secret agendas that are going on. And it basically ties it all together with the Club of Rome, which is, you know, also called the Committee of 300. And so, I'll find this article in a second. Every time I do y'all show, I've got like 100 articles sitting in front of me all the time. But anyhow, all of these things are tied back through the Rothschild banking cartel, the Bank of England, the royal family, all of the people that we've listed over and over and over again. And it all ties back to the Committee of 300, the UN, the MI6, the Institute for Strategic Studies, the Trilateral Commission, the Bilderbergers, the Round Table, the Royal Institute for International Affairs, the Tavistock Institute. It ties into Kissinger. It ties into the Rand organization. Gosh, Rand, God, if we get into that tonight, that's ridiculous how that thing does. And all of these things are basically tied together, including the Stanford Research Institute. We hear so much of Stanford, 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 Stanford. And these are the guys that are doing this. Now, the Committee of 300, which is the ones running a lot of this, which is basically part of this group, says the number one goal they have here. And they tell this. This is extracted from Conspirators Hierarchy, the story of the Committee of 300 by John Coleman, the same guy who wrote this last book. He says the number one goal is establish a one-world government and a one-world monetary system. Second is the utter destruction of all national identity and national pride. Number three, to engineer and bring about the destruction of religion, primarily Christianity, to establish, to control each every person with the means of mind control, to bring about an end to all industrialization and the production of nuclear-generated power. They want to especially get rid of fusion capabilities or technologies for any of that for free power, and also with Tesla. They want, number six, to encourage and eventually legalize use of drugs and make pornography an addiction and an art form, which they've done very well, to bring about depopulation of large cities, to suppress all scientific development except for those deemed beneficial by them, to cause by means of limited wars in advanced countries, by means of starvation and diseases in third world countries, the death of 3 billion people by the year 2050. This is what they're saying. The Committee of 300 commissioned Cyrus Vance to write a paper on this subject on how to bring about such genocide. The paper was produced under the title Global 2000 Report and was accepted and approved for action by former President James Earl Carter and Edward Muskie, the Secretary of State, four on behalf of the U.S. government. I mean, this stuff's just nuts when you start reading this. To weaken the moral fiber of the nation, demoralize workers, to basically creating mass unemployment as jobs dwindle to the post-industrial growth, which we have 100 million unemployed now, introduced by this Club of Rome and all these different treaties. Use rock music to destroy the youth. To keep
Hold that thought, Ted.
Inside of your own desire. Okay, we'll finish this and then we'll start some other stuff.
Folks, you're listening to Ted Brewer on this Thursday edition of the Hageman and Hageman Report. Go to his website, healthmasters.com. That's healthmasters.com. His book, Breakthrough Health, there. Also, you can sign up for his email alert, and we'll be right back with Dr. Brewer as he'll be with us from the next hour until the rest of the show. Stay with us.
This is the Global Star Radio Network.